September 20, 2021. It's a lot for Pedro's show.
Make a move and take a chance. the lies you keep inside, you hide away. After all, it's all we know. Give the ruins room to grow. All that's left are little lies. Your eyes.
Yep. Happy Monday. We started off with John Coltrane doing In a Sentimental Mood, then John P. Strome with Inside. And you might have noticed that I'm not man alone because of that voice that kept trying to bogart on me, bringing in the show. Those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, we got John P. Strome. Welcome aboard, John.
Thank you so much. It's great to be on the show.
I think the last time I saw you was maybe in Manhattan.
I can tell you exactly when it was.
Or was it in Austin, Texas? It was
South by Southwest, yeah.
That's right. It was Austin, Texas. And some kind of gig, right? Or something. We were at.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what I was there, you know, sort of.
I bet you it's in the fucking tour diary, though.
It's in the tour diary. Well, I don't know.
I should have been doing that shit way back with the Firehose touring with Blake Babies. You know, I didn't start doing diary until like 1999. I tried one in 83 with the first time Minuteman went overseas. But, yeah, I was 20 years late with that. But let's talk about your journey through music, John.
Okay.
Please bring the earliest recollection memory of music.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little, but you were asking for my earliest memory of engaging with music. And that would be when I was about 3 years old, I was obsessed with the Glenn Campbell Show on TV. Or maybe it was the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour. It's one of those shows that Glenn Campbell had. And, you know, my parents would leave the TV on after the news, and I got super engaged with that and, you know, kind of went from there. But, you know, kind of the first time I actually saw somebody with a guitar singing and a microphone making a song, I was completely fascinated. You know, I'm not saying it could have been anybody. It was good that it was Glenn Campbell because I'm still a fan to this day. But that was what initially knocked me out was, you know, just the idea that you could get up and do that.
Now, the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments?
No. So I grew up in Bloomington, Indiana, and my parents are professors at Indiana University. They're not anymore, but they were. And, you know, they've moved on and retired. My old man lives in New York now, but no, they were music fans, music appreciators. We had a nice sounding stereo and a bunch of great albums. My old man was super into Bob Dylan and kind of anything that spun out from that. So it was a lot of really good shit, a lot of folk music but they don't play music. Nobody in my family plays music. So it was a unique challenge for them with me really wanting to play music. And I had a fits and starts music education that really didn't get going until I started playing punk rock.
Well, let me ask you about grade school. Were you in the choir, marching band, shit like that?
I was in the choir. I used to get kicked out of choir and band on the regular. I was somewhat unfocused and arrogant kid. You know, something happened that was kind of set the stage for the years to follow when I was about 5 or 6 years old, which is my mother put me in a music class. And the woman who taught the class, who I think was a really good music educator, singled me out and identified that I was talented to my mother, who didn't know how to, you know, kind of navigate these things. And the reason was because she did this exercise where she would clap out a rhythm, and then she'd have, you know, these little kids clap the rhythm back. And I could do it for four bars. I could do it for like a really, you know, insanely long time for somebody that age. So she's like, this kid is definitely getting it. You need to get a further music education. And then it was the wilderness for a long time. So I hated choir. I hated school band. And the pattern was they'd get me an instrument to learn. I'd take lessons and I wouldn't get anywhere with it.
What band did you play in school? What instrument did you play in band at school?
Well, that's kind of when I got going. So sixth grade, I tried piano. I tried guitar. I had a little gut string guitar around the house. So I figured out how to tune it to a chord so I could make songs. But, you know, they considered that to be not really formal music education. But then I started playing drums in school band. So sixth grade, I was on the snare drum. And that's the first thing I really enjoyed. And then I got some drum set lessons, and by the time I was in high school, I was playing in bands, and then I was off to the races.
You mean the lessons, it was a part of school, as an outside teacher?
I had a jazz teacher, and he was great. This guy, Scott McCord, I wonder if he's still alive and kicking. He was probably, 15 or so years older than me. But he had a lot of strong ideas about how you played drums. Like, he said you should never polish your cymbals because that ruins your tone.
That's a jazz
thing. Yeah, yeah.
Right. They don't like same thing with the guitarists. They want dead strings, you know, flats that
yeah,
you never change
right.
Because they want no overtones to get away of the punch, I think. Let me ask you this. First record you bought with your own money.
Well, it's kind of an embarrassing story maybe a little bit, but I was – the first song that I heard on the radio that I had to have a copy of to listen to myself was Rock and Roll All Night by Kiss, but I didn't know what it was. So that would have been second grade, I guess, 76. That song was on the radio. It was on AM radio. And that was back in the days when we just listened to the real JLW and WTTS in Bloomington and hear all the hits. And I heard that song and I was like, holy mackerel, that is a song I've got to hear again. So I didn't really know how to describe it. I just went to my old man. I said, I heard this song, and I want to buy a record. And he said, okay, let's go to the record store. And then we went to the record store, and I walked out of there with the record he wanted to buy, which he convinced me to buy, which was the Eagles' Greatest Hits. And I brought it home, and I was super disappointed because it wasn't the right song, and it didn't really rock, you know. I mean, I kind of liked that Witchy Woman a little bit, but I was stuck with this Eagles record, so I listened to it a bunch, and I kind of came around to it, but it was very disappointing. I went and had a second try, and I went home then with Kiss Alive, and I felt better about that. But, yeah, I was a hard rock kid. I was into Kiss, and then,
what was the first gig you went and saw?
Oh, the first gig ever? Well, that was in 1978, so I would have been 11. I got my old man to take my couple of buddies and me to see Yes in the Round.
Yes, bass player band, Chris Squire.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you listen to the mixes, it's kind of easy to tell why. But, you know, I never heard of a bass player leading a band until Richard Hell. And that's why he ended up my first punk rock hero. You gave me this here, Counting Back.
Yeah.
Lost along the way, one had so much fun for the price we had to pay, and now we're counting backwards, 3 to 2 to 1 to none. Losing track of all the places in the sun. Never going back even on holiday. Never going back to where you long to stay. Love will find another way. Three girls I loved when I was young, only to remain. And another's come unstrung, and now we're counting backwards, count it up when the day is done. Losing track of all the places in the sun. Never going back even on holiday. Never going back even though you long to stay. Love will find another way. One he had a gun and he blew himself away, and now we're counting backwards, 3-2-1-9. Losing track of all the places in the sun. Never going back even on holiday. Never going back to where you long to stay. Love will find another way.
I want you to stay.
Watt for Pedro show. Start off that chunk with music. John P. Strome, Counting Backwards. And then from Brazil, brand new. Vermes do Limbo, right? Worms, Limbo Worms. Direte. Bill Nace, yeah, with part 8 of 8 of his piece, Both. And he's just getting done with a new album, he just told me. Up Around the Sun, which is a new proj in Austin, Texas, with Tim Kerr, Big Boy. I mean, my second Mission Men are going to do a Big Boy. I remember in those days, you know, Minutemen, Big Boys, really influenced by pop group. The whole idea of just Cap Beefheart with Parliament Funkadelic. Why not, you know? Chris Gregory, brand new. Bird Flight, part 2 of 3. Mode Open out of Baltimore. Cuticle Canicle. Bombas Prendon, Questions. And then This American Lie, John P. Strome. So, you're getting the drums. Well, you're, yep, getting into all kinds of instruments, right? But the drums is what you like, and it's probably, now I'm not saying after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon, bedroom band, basement band, garage band, right? Buddies doing drums?
Well, yeah, exactly. I had a best buddy back then, Harry, and we'd set our drum kits up together, and we were all competitive with each other, and got pretty good.
Oh, wow.
And so I did not have...
The band had two drummers.
Well, it wasn't a band. It was just, you know, my buddy Harry and me, you know, getting on the kit and sort,
yeah,
of
challenging, yeah,
each other. We're just learning how to play. So
like jams,
we were not thinking,
right,
of it as a band, you know.
Yeah, like jams.
And
probably trying to learn stuff off records, right? That's what me and D Boone.
Exactly. Did. Yeah. How the hell do we do it, you know? And definitely getting each other to up each other's game, because, you know, you'd have to show up with something, because he was a good drummer. And so then from there, got into playing in punk rock bands and, you know, that was just kind of playing around the neighborhood stuff. We had an all ages club, and but by mid high school, I was playing gigs out of town. And
can you remember your first gig?
Yeah, I do, man, and I remember how terrifying it was. So they used to have this thing in Bloomington called Street Dances, and it was the local cable radio station put them on, WQAX, and the local bands would play on the street, and they block off streets, and that was my first goal. I want to play a street dance. And my band played one of these street dances, and I just remember being terror-stricken about it. It was no big deal. It was great. Actually, that was – I don't know if that was the very street dance, but one of those right around that time, I saw the live band that kind of set my future out in front of me, and that was a band called the Zero Boys. Do you remember them?
Sure, sure. I think Minutemen got to play with them. And it was like a fucking –
Probably.
It was a fucking toga party, like Animal House shit. Maybe it was four guys were involved. I don't know, but it was trippy. But Minutemen did get to play with them cats. I'm pretty sure. You know, a little while ago.
Well, it would be likely.
Did this band have a name?
That band, gosh, what was that band called? I think that band was called Yellow Rain.
Okay.
And I had a band. So there's a guy that kind of distinguished himself later. He is a producer engineer that was kind of a cut up, and he was a couple years older than me, and he had a band that had a kind of name around the circuit, and the band is called Killing Children, and it was such an embarrassing name that I wouldn't want to tell people about it, but it was a band that was actually kind of popular. So that was my first experience sort of playing gigs, and it was a joke hardcore band, you know. It was like a tongue-in-cheek, you know, trying to think of the most offensive name we could come up with, you know. And most of it was making fun of Glenn Danzig. That was the main kind of deal with the band, was sort of making jokes about death punk, you know.
And not, well, later on, right, some cat came out with a fanzine. It's not just Glenn, but Henry's with him, too. You ever see that shit? It's like they're all,
I did, yeah, and it's easy to make fun of that stuff, but it's, we also thought it was awesome. I mean, we didn't really think, you know, we thought the Misfits were amazing, but we also thought the whole thing was kind of silly. So since we couldn't do it for real, you know, since we're kind of getting our feet wet, it was like easier to kind of make fun of it. But it was a good band, and I got pretty good at drums. Oh, and also speaking of the Bluebird, another thing I would do is I was kind, yeah, of on call to play like the blues jam, you know. I'd you know, be the guy behind the drums for, you know, 4 hours of people coming and playing blues licks and stuff. So I was getting a lot of experience.
That's good,
you know,
crack.
Experience.
That's
out of a
good
bar.
Crack.
Yeah.
Now,
yep,
high school's over. But you go to higher.
Well, let me say, this is okay. Where a character you know comes in, Frida Love, Frida from Blink Babies. We were high school sweethearts, and at some point, kind of toward the end of high school, she came to me and she's like, okay, I know you're going to be a musician and I want to do it too. And so I have to learn an instrument. So I think I should be the drummer. And I was like, huh? And I was learning guitar at that point. She's like, you should be playing guitar. I should be on drums. So I knew the deal. You know, it's like people want to learn drums. You go down, you try to show them a basic beat. You know, half an hour later, they're frustrated. They give up. So we went down to the basement and I showed her a basic beat and she was playing right away with good feel. You know, I was like, oh, so then we started building something with me and guitar and her on drums. And it was kind of a move away from hardcore because she couldn't play like that. You know, she could groove like Mo Tucker, you know. So that kind of dictated the direction of our next band.
Right. But what I was going to ask you was, you decide after high school to higher education with music, right?
I did. You know, my parents and the set of professors, it was really important to them that I go to college, but I wasn't really... I didn't really have the kind of discipline. I was focused on music. I didn't really want to go to college. So I sort of conned them into letting me go to Berkeley in Boston, which is where I knew I could go and really get a band going. So I was not at that time like, oh, I've got to get an education. That came later. You know, I actually finished schools, as we'll probably talk about. But
But I know there, because Boston ends up a big connect, and it's a little bit different than Bloomington. And then the Berklee School of Music, right? Especially with the Kinects.
Well, there's a lot that was going on there that was ridiculous at the time, you know, like the sort of what they call jazz funk, you know, the kind of Weather Channel music.
Fusion.
And, you know, there are a lot of real jazz purists there and stuff.
I think fusion,
metal
not really
shredders.
Purists. I would call it more jazz fusion. Not to get hung up on semantics or anything.
Well, no, but there were definitely like bebop purists. You know, there are these dudes that hang around in suits, you know, pretending like they were in Miles Davis band, you know, in the 50s. You know, that was a thing too. Like music stopped at this point. Like I run into those people now because, you know, they're purists in all sorts of genres. So like they're bluegrass purists. You know, there's definitely jazz purists, and you know, for that matter, there's like garage rock purists.
Yeah, Beatlemania, right? Dress up like the Fab Four, and it's Halloween every night, and it gets to be kind of shtick, right? At some point, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but music's music. That genre shit is fucked up a lot of things, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm about open creativity. You know, I don't think that there should be rules in music, and I know you are too. We've talked about this a lot. You know, it's. You should be able to find your thing. But I got lucky because I met great people. You know, by the end of my first year at Berklee, I'd met Juliana Hatfield.
That's what I meant by connects. I know there's people wearing costumes and putting on airs. You know, we're all, what they say, youth is wasted on the young. We all have to go through trips, right? Now, if you keep doing that as a less younger guy, But I think there's steps, right? You got to fuck up and try to find where the fuck you're going. But you do get to meet the third member with Frida, and you make Blake Baby. And that's how I know you. I think it was
right around that time.
On Clark Street in Chicago.
Our first gig?
Together, sharing the same stage.
Yeah, that's right. And I have to say that touring with Firehose, and we did several times, we probably did somewhere around, you know, 30 or so shows together. Incredibly formative for all of us. You know, you were a great mentor for our band, you know.
I remember we were going to do a whole tour together, and it ended after the first gig because your boat hit a fucking pillar that supports a light at Shopping Center Park. The tour was over, right? Your face on the steering wheel and the radiator broke, all the fluid. Like, the tour's done.
Oh, God. Yeah, I was not super responsible, I guess.
Well, you couldn't see because you were pushing around a shopping cart. Yeah, maybe not have fun with the boat on tour. But anyway, tell me about the first Blake Baby gig.
Well, we found that we had everything in common. This is Julianne and Frida and me in terms of the music we loved. We loved X. We loved, you know, Husker Du. We loved R.E.M. We had all these favorite bands in common, Replacements. And so I had some songs. Julianne had some songs. So very quickly we got some repertoire together. And we started practicing at Berkeley, and the jazz fusion and metal people would openly laugh at us because you could hear what was coming out of the rooms, and you know, as a window, they could look in there, they could see Frida behind the drums, she still kind of knew one beat, you know, and they just laughed full throated, ha ha ha. And, you know, we were not dissuaded by that. And then the first gig that we got was actually in a kind of a used clothing store. They moved the racks. And we went in there and played basically for our friends. But, we were confident what we're doing.
Was it as scary as that first gig with the city dance? Street dance?
No, but it was weird because when we were loading out, like, we'd have to get a taxi to load out, you know, and get a cab to move our gear. So we had a cab, like a station wagon cab, pull up in front of Berkeley. And then we were loading our stuff, and I was running because we didn't have much time. And I jumped on the stairwell, and I bashed my head into this awning. And I cut my head open, and I had to go to the hospital in an ambulance.
Oh, shit.
So I went and got my head stitched up, and they put me on some pain drugs, and I went back and played the gig. So I was kind of like in an alternate reality, I'd say. It was
all filled up.
Very, very weird experience, but we got through it. We played.
Yeah, and you know, the band, it did have some, you know, thing that made it itself. It didn't seem like you guys were trying to be any other. Maybe you had bands you liked and stuff, but you weren't trying to be those bands.
No.
Yeah, you weren't you weren't REM. You guys were Blake Babies. Who named that band?
Damn straight, Allen Ginsberg.
Wow. What, you met him? And I think you told me the story. You asked him, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was before Juliana was in the band. We had another guy, funny dude, who was singing in the band. Dan Walcott was his name. And he and I think Frida went to an Allen Ginsberg reading where he had his harmonium, you know, and he was kind of carrying on.
Yeah, I went to one of those here in West Hollywood.
Thought he was amazing. And so we decided while we were watching, we're like, let's go to the Q&A afterwards and ask him to name our band. And just whatever he comes up with, that'll be our band name. And so I went up and I said, hey, you know, great respect. We love your work. You know, we have a band. How'd you like to name our band? He said, yes, Blake Babies.
That's beautiful. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, September 20, 2021. Just Watt People Show. Special guest, John P. Strome. Hold tight for hour two. September 20, 2021. Second hour, Watt Pedro.
with your recovery. Take it one day at a time. I chart for the hour between 4 and 5 a.m. A diagram for the sand dust. A revolution leaves heads spinning. Incalculable loss. Constant, ceaseless, certain of that you can be. I'm losing you, you're losing me. After all, you can't take it with you. So why hold on to anything?
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I've got a girl in a box. Keep her under my bed. Sure must get hot in the summertime. I get her out. There's nothing else to do. There's nothing on TV when I can't see you. Wife don't mind if I give her a child. My wife don't mind. She thinks it's pretty wild. I've got this girl in a box. I got a girl in a box. I'll keep her till the day. I'll keep her till the day. I'll keep her till the day that I die. And I hope I die in the nighttime with my TV on and a beer in my hand. You by my side. I got a girl and a fox. We play games. I'm anything I'm not, but I wanna be. Yeah, I wanna be. She'll be a slut, a dirty little whore, or the girl next door, or my bride instead, or I'll cut off her head if I want to. Yeah, I want to. I'll keep her till the day. I'll keep her till the day. I'll keep her till the day that I die. I've got a girl in a box. I've got a girl in a box.
Talk for Pedro. Shall we start off the second hour? Blake Babies, Out There. Ben Salter, brand new album out of Tasmania. Loss, that's the name of the song. Nearby Sydney, Luca Sabella with Vias for Varicella. That's new for me. Tropicova Kushna Pesci, Pod Nadzorom. Sorry, destroyed Croatian very easily, not on purpose. But that's, yeah, in English, you're under surveillance. And finally, Girl in a Box, Blake Babies. So, did you do any recording with those cats in Bloomington, or is your first recording in Boston?
It was really in Boston. We did some four tracking, you know, on the Fostex, and I sort of understood a little bit about the process, but we had a kind of a Singali early on, and Blake Babies and T.W. Lee, who worked at the Boston Film and Video Foundation, and they had an 8-track studio, and we could go in there after hours. So, you know, we kind of figured it out together and made our first record in several different studios, just however we could do it. Always late at night, because we're always trying to go off the books.
Morricano.
But our first real... Oh, go ahead.
Morricano, Minutemen would do that. They called it downtime. It was half as much money, midnight to 8.
Oh, yeah, we never recorded at any time that any reasonable person would be awake.
The only one we did during daytime was a three-way tie, the worst one. They were all at the... We also always used tape, right, because it was half as much. Shit, we used to record in order so you didn't have to spend money on sequencing. So, that first album, it was self-produced?
Like, yeah, we put out one ourselves, and that got some attention for us. So during that time, also, I was playing drums in the Lemonheads.
I was doing double duty
at that point. You know, I was playing with Julian Afrida. I was also playing drums in the Lemonheads. Eventually, both bands got so busy that I had to choose, and obviously, I chose the band I was writing the songs for.
Can I ask you that? Did you ever write songs on drums?
On drums, no. No, I didn't start writing songs till we started Blake Babies, and it's kind of a 50-50 split with Julianne and me writing. So the two songs you just played, one of those was a co-write where she wrote the words. The other one that I'm singing is one that I wrote on my own. But we're all figuring out how to write songs. But there was a real great songwriters community there in Boston at that time. You know, we had Bill Janovitz from Buffalo Tom, and Evan and Ben from Lemonheads, and Dean Wareham was there. Mascus was somewhere in the kind of in the air, for sure.
A little more west.
Yeah, but he was definitely around and a strong influence. Charles from the Pixies. Just a real emphasis on songwriting. Like, we got to write great songs. That's what it had to be about, which I carry to this day. I'm really glad to have been in a community where, we're kind of, you feel like you got to write something great because you're going to be playing it for other great songwriters and you want them to be impressed, That sort of community.
I'm into it, okay? Believe me, me and D. Boone didn't know one motherfucker wrote their own songs in the 70s till the movement.
Yeah.
We met punk rockers. Everybody copied. But this other thing I'm trying to get at, John, is why does the songwriting... I mean, this happened with when I read Beneath the Underdog, Charlie Mingus. Right? He does this wild-ass bass, but he's going to write songs on the piano.
Right.
Why can't the bass be a composition tool? Why can't the drums be a composition tool?
Well, it is for you, but I'll tell you this, and I don't think I've ever shared this with anybody, but there's one thing that I do. Like, I do a lot of hiking and running, and I like to go out without ears on sometimes. And the thing that I always start to do is tapping out rhythms with my teeth. So if I'm walking along and I'm deep in my head, it's like I realize that I've got some rhythm going on my teeth. And I've come up with really good rhythms, and then I get home and I make voice memos of the rhythms, and I use those in my writing.
So you are kind of composing with drumming. Yeah.
Yeah, I start with, and I'm not very sophisticated with, making loops and beats and stuff like that, and that's something I would like to get better at. Because I still think of writing as, I start with a guitar, come up with some changes, come up with a melody, come up with lyrics, and I know that growth for me as a songwriter would be to get out of that and start to, there's some songs that I wrote, I think one you played before that I wrote on piano, even though I'm not a very good piano player, because it gets me out of my kind of go-tos as a guitar player.
Yeah, because it's easy to get caught up in shtick, right? And all of a sudden you're on autopilot.
That's right.
It's a human thing. Let's go back to these John P. Strome. I want to talk about this John P. Strome project. Your heart.
Yeah.
tell it to your heart.
Bye. someone go and let it all down. Assume how you're done and warm and low. What have you done? What have you done? Nobody knows. What have you done? Nobody knows. Take two steps back. Take two steps back. Assume your cost of living. Assume you'll die. Thus do stone. Dead young. Stop. And you, no one else knows. No one else knows. Take a step back and retreat. That you feed your brain. Take the steps back and remember. Soul and remember fire. There's an opportunity. It might be yours. It might be yours. It might be yours.
Staring at the ceiling, reeling
Peter Show. That Chuck of Music starred John P. Strong. Don't Tell to Your Heart. Kishy Bashy with Annie, Heart Thief of the Sea. He was on a couple weeks ago. Great. Los Skeletons. Skeletons. South London. I'm the Funky Thang. You know, that's how they talk there. And Manuel Armida, Mexico City cat, but he lives up in Yellowknife, Northwest Territory. Face in the Sky, It Might Be Yours. And then John P. Strome, Ready for Nothing. That's optimistic. Tell me about this John P. Strome project.
Well, look, I mean, I've been out of the music making thing in any kind of serious way for quite a while. And I made a couple solo records back in the 90s, into the 2000s. But I left music very deliberately and went back to school and became a lawyer representing musicians. And now I work at a music company, and I love my work. But I've had definitely the itch to get back. And in a lot of ways, it was the pandemic that made me want to get back into playing and recording music, because, you know, I had the kind of headspace, you know, and I also have kids who are older now. So coming out of a really, really, really busy period of my life, it's like, what do I miss? What do I enjoy? It's playing music. So I'm now pushing. And the seven songs I sent you are from an album that I'm making that's in process, you know, so it's, nobody's heard this stuff, haven't shared it yet. You know, it's kind of obscurely tucked away on SoundCloud if anyone wants to hunt it down. But it's something that I will commercially release sometime in the next year or so.
Okay,
whenever I'm done.
Tell me something about it, though. Like, who are you playing everything?
I play pretty much everything. There's a guy named Aaron Lee Tashin who is a great musician in Nashville you should know about, who is kind of a collaborator. There's a guy named Gregory Latimer who's a buddy that has a studio. He and I knew each other in the 90s. You know, I actually went out to his house to talk about helping him with a publishing deal, and we ended up collaborating.
That's like, how it happens sometimes, here. Right? It's about people. It's about people.
I was his lawyer. He's like, yeah, hang out. Let's make something. And he was just a really creative guy. So I started bringing in ideas, and he started putting shape to them. And, you know, I've got a few other friends, the rhythm section of Phoebe Bridgers' band.
Yeah, I'm curious. Are you the drummer? Are you the drummer on this stuff?
I'm the drummer, except there's one that that has a drummer.
Okay, so and, like you're playing
mostly it's me.
Do you record the drums first? I'm just interested in the process, you know, because Stevie Wonder, Prince, even Dave Grohl's first Foo Fighter, right? They're one-man albums, and they all the three things in common. Is they started with the drums.
So the way that I initially tried to do it, Gregory has a very, very strong aesthetic, which is a good one, I think. And he likes things to be very sort of spare and stripped down. And so initially I went in there with a band. I had Ken Coomer from Uncle Tupelo and Wilco.
I remember him. He's a
great drummer. And,
John, before that, Clockhammer.
Oh, yeah, Clockhammer, yes, that's the guy.
Great band.
You know, he's a great buddy. He's one of the. Yeah,
Matt's
that's right.
Now playing with the Lamb Chop guy.
Yeah, Ken and this guy, Jared, were a rhythm section I was playing with at the time. We got a band, and we play with sometimes with Bobby Bear Jr. And so I brought them in the studio, and we laid down the songs, and you know, Gregory was just like, no, this is all wrong. We gotta do this a different way. So it's kind of assembled. Like, I think that what we did for all of them was I would play the primary instrument, whether it was guitar or piano, with a clock, and then we build it from there. So I'd go in there and do some kind of very, very simple drum beat that might be looped, and then we build on top of that. So it was very, very much studio constructed tracks, you know, not something that was like a band playing in studio at all. And mostly me, you know, I'd be like, okay, now I'm going to go play bass. Now I'm going to go make up a keyboard part. Unless I brought somebody in very deliberately. Like if you hear a female voice, obviously that's not me. But,
What kind of bass did you play?
Trying to remember what he had. It was whatever was in the studio. It wasn't anything really remarkable. I think
that's all right. I'm a little prejudiced that way, you know. We're at the end of the September 20, 2021 dish. What Pedro so special guest John P. Strome. Hold tight for hour three. September 20, 2021. It's the third hour of the What for Pedro show.
good news I bring you is this. Your captivity is over.
Good luck being perfect now. That can count. Raising your standards, I'm gonna save you now.
Our show started the third hour off with John P. Strum, A plus B equals Y, of course. Bates, New York City. Yeah, one of the best fucking band names in the world. Am I a lioness? I guess he should have a question mark there. Three-quarter romantic blues from Crane, who, by the way, people up in northern Idaho, he got the COVID-19, man, and he's fighting it now. Gotta be careful, shit. Man, it fucks me up. A tropical fuck storm, the greatest story ever told. Good fuck becoming unbecoming, and when the world sang along, John P. Strom. So, do you make demos? Or is it like you said, you and your buddy, you just build these things, parts is parts?
When I write, I just tape stuff on my phone, you know, and I should have a better home studio set up here, but and I do, you know, I have audio gear so I could do something that sounds better, but it's just like, I like to work with somebody. I don't like to self-produce, literally. You know, I was an engineer at one point out of Berkeley, and I worked in studios, and I could do it, but I don't enjoy being creative while I'm having to do all the technical stuff. I want somebody else to be kind of driving while I'm creative. So it's great to have a collaborator. So yeah, I just tape it on my phone and go in there and say, here's what I got, and then take it from there.
That's why I mentioned a demo, like, because sometimes, like they say, a picture is worth a million words. Instead of telling the dude all the parts or writing it all out on a manuscript paper, you just play them like this, like you said, what, a voice memo?
I don't do that. You know, I want to have other people's ideas in there. You know, I don't want it just to be something that I dictate. I think it's more interesting that way. But I wanted to mention, there's one song you played, A Plus B Equals Y, which is a cover by a band called Polera. Do you remember the band Polera? Is that familiar to you?
With the Galaxy 500 people?
They were never a big band. They were from Minneapolis. They were signed to Interscope.
Oh, and, that's it. No, I played with them. I think they had a drummer that stood up. Maybe?
That was Shakespeare, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, so the guy that was the main guy in Polaris is a guy named Ed Ackerson, who was kind of my best friend for a long time, a musical collaborator. And speaking of heartbreaking stuff, he got cancer and died in 2019. He had a pancreatic cancer, and it was very sad. So and he and I were very close. So I contributed that song to a compilation that was a fundraiser in his memory. But I've also been very inspired by, you know, losing my main collaborator the last 20 years in that way, and it's made me want to make music again, and so that's been a sort of silver lining. And a couple times, basically bookending the pandemic, February 2020, and then more recently last summer, I went up to Minneapolis and stood in his shoes and fronted that band, you know, as the front person of Polera, you know, by his widow's request, you know, to pay tribute to his music, which has meant a lot to me. And it's got me back into it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, losing people has always been the hardest lesson for me, and I've never gotten fucking used to it.
No, and it sucks about getting older because it happens more.
Not
know?
Older, like, less younger.
Yeah, less younger. There you go. Getting less younger, that shit happens
the
more
odds
often,
go but, up, right? Yeah, the odds go up.
Yep.
But it fucking it's never... It's not like, oh, man, like you got a callus on your heart or something. Like, oh, I'm used to that now.
No.
It hurts every fucking time.
It doesn't get easier.
You gave me a couple more. Blake Baby. Let's play.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. brain rings me around again from another restless night who find demons in my head. But I'm not scared anymore, no. No, I'm not afraid of that lie. I'm not afraid. Good morning, Mr. Vampire. You're sleeping like you're dead. Good morning, Mr. Vampire. It's time to face the living world. All every night from dusk till dawn, but it's oh so hard. When the stakes are this high. But I'm not scared anymore, no I'm not. No, I'm not afraid of that lie. Like you're dead. Good morning, Mr. Vampire. It's time to face the living world. Good morning, Mr. Vampire. Good morning, Mr. Vampire. Good morning to you all.
Thank you all. Cheers.
Yeah.
Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Sanctified from Blank Babies. Then Waiting for Black Metal Records to Come in the Mail from Have a Nice Life. Good morning, Mr. Vampire. This is Live in the Netherlands, Tim Holhouse. Bad Blood Exhaust out of Germany. Beast, Black Humor, Next Step. This album cover, you know what, they went to the thrift store. This is like early 80s. And, you know, got all these soul records and just painted their name on the... Mine had Aretha, was originally Aretha Franklin. These spray paint on, yeah. And I played the... This one's called Next Step. But last episode, I played Neo Hippies. And it's got the greatest line, you know, the only thing new is you finding out about it. That's pretty... Mm. Yeah, it's right to the point. No Joy with Star Child is Dead. Don't mean to laugh. And finally, Blank Babies with Train. Look, music, especially a gig or a record, it's not just the cats making the sounds, right? It's about a bunch of people, usually.
Yep.
A gig is more, I think, maybe the music maker and the gig goer, the listener. But the other stuff, like, you know, records and maybe big gigs. Nah, even a club gig, you need some dude. You can't mix it from the stage.
Right.
Like, sure, yeah. So what I'm getting at is this job you got. You can put someone in a situation where they can compose and have their stuff released. That's an incredible kind of power. Sounds gross, but opportunity maker thing.
Well, I'll tell you this, Mike. It's challenging because... I spent my first 30 years of my life as a musician, and then I spent the next 20 years of my life as a basically artist advocate, as a lawyer. And now I'm president of a record company. And it's not like I'm autonomous to do whatever I want. It's a big Concord's a big company.
Of course.
And I run a couple of labels that are within Concord, you know, and I have, you know, Tom Wally's my boss, and there's, you know, board of directors over him. So it's like, it's a process, but
That's why I didn't want to say power, because that sounded weird. But opportunity creator, you can definitely get that going.
And
it's not like you're this dictator that waves his hand. I'm not trying to say that, but you might be able to provide some opportunity.
Well, I like connecting music with listeners, you know. And when I hear music that really blows me away, it's like I want to turn other people onto it. And that's one of the great joys of my life. Say, hey, check this out. And it's a way to be, you know, saying that on a very grand scale, and, you know, get music in people's ears. And, you know, I'm still as passionate about music now as I was when I was, you know, a kid. And, you know, it's happy to be getting back into making music, but, you know, the primary thing in my life is supporting, musical projects that I think are great and want people to hear, you know, and I'm very, very satisfied to be a sort of behind the scenes music advocate as opposed to being, you know, somebody who's, you know, center of attention. That's comfortable for me.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to be kind of open-minded, right?
Well, look, I mean, you know it's great. You know when it's great. It's great when you know, whatever it is that happens to you, you know, the hairs in the back of your neck stand up or whatever. It's like when you hear something that's great, you know it's great. And I'm real confident about what I think is great. And, you know, and it's exciting to me. So, you know, that's the main thing that guides me in what I do is listening and having a lifetime of loving music and you know, wait for the thing that's really going to light me up, you know. That's why my job is great.
And also, since you've been there, you can kind of relate to these cats.
Yeah, that's...
You know what I mean? Remember the old paradigm, the suits, you know, us in the suits?
Now, yeah, I
how
do.
Long have you been wearing the suit, right? But to me, you don't seem like such a suit.
Well, I'm no different now than I was when we were hanging out back in the 80s.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm sort of on the same trip. You know, I realized at some point with Blank Babies, a lot of what I was doing was what I do now. I was trying to find a way to move things forward and make connections to get the band so people would hear it, so we could play those gigs and, you know, get overseas and make records and stuff. And I still do that. I just do that for other people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, don't get me wrong.
It's easier for me.
look, there's guys in suits that have helped me out big time, and big reason I feel was because they were open-minded.
Sure.
And I'm very grateful for that, you know. It's so much shit is so uptight, and everybody thinks the way it's supposed to be. What the fuck? How do you ever have a tomorrow that everything's figured out? Anyway.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned suits, because there was a time when I had a crash and burn moment when I was about 30. I'd been on tour with Lemonheads with Evan, and it was kind of going wrong, and I was real frustrated, and I wanted to have a family. So I just said, fuck it all, and that's when I went to law school, and it was kind of like a reset, you know, like I'm going to do something different with my life. And for a couple of years, I was just a lawyer. I was putting on a suit every day and going into a big law firm and moving money around. You know, that was my gig. And I hated that. That was really rough. Because all of a sudden I had kids at home and I had a job and
I was
paying my bills, but
yeah,
it was miserable. So then I had to find my way back to music, and that was my next phase, was like, how do I get back to being about music? So I'm very grateful every single day that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah, John, I'm grateful to have you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing all this with us, please.
Great pleasure. Well, it's good to talk to you. This is the way we can do it, you know. If I only run into you every 5 years or so, you know.
I got a tour. I'll be out in Nashville in March or April, something like that. With Mike.
Well,
together.
I'll come and we'll hang out. It'll be great. Okay. It'll be great
you
to see
up
you
from Franklin.
Yes.
You know what I will ask you to do? To cut the shit and start the pit.
Yeah, that's right.
Big love, John. People, it's been September 20th.
You can count on me, Watt. You can count on me in the pit.
Keep your powder dry.